Hey everyone, it's Fahan, and you're listening to the Nisa Invest Tea Talk podcast. Hope everybody's good, ready to start your Friday. Alhamdulillah, Juma today, and we're here to recreate in podcast form what happened last year at my local mosque sisters circle, where a few of us got together and I was able to run a session on all things halal personal finance. Whether it had to do with budgeting, halal investing, pensions, we covered all of it. And at the end of the session, I asked my sisters to leave me with what further questions they had so I could cover them with you in podcast form. So thanks so much for joining me, and let's get started. Welcome back, and thanks so much for joining me for another episode of the Nisa Invest Tea Talk podcast. In this episode, the question this week asks more about financial literacy, halal ways of spending and saving. So when I looked at this question, I thought to myself, okay, this is looking to focus less on the investing, pensions, taxes element of personal finance, but more about simply what does it actually mean to be financially literate? So where is it that you start from? Now, I've always tried to stay away from the term financial literacy because I just feel like it's a very strong word to say someone's illiterate at something. Because very often when you start to look into personal finance a bit more, you quickly realize that it has a lot less to do with the actual knowledge of knowing the terms relating to finance and more about your habits, your goals, your values, and what you're trying to achieve. And so when I look at this question, I take it to mean that we're looking to focus on what are the fundamentals of personal finance. And to me, the fundamentals are about creating financial resilience in your life. So being resilient means that depending on a wide range of outcomes, you're okay with them. You've kind of managed your options so that whatever happens, to a certain extent, you're able to deal with the consequences. And why is that so important? Because financial resilience is what allows us to then be able to achieve more or plan further ahead with our finances, especially since things like investing and moving jobs and starting businesses, etc., it inherently carry a lot of risk. Now, in practical terms, what we'll do in this episode, we're basically going to focus on step one and two of personal finance, which to me is building an emergency fund and keeping an eye on your fixed expenses and kind of getting a handle on that. And taken together, these two are exactly what it is that gives you room to breathe in your budget and allows you to move towards other goals, knowing that you have taken care of your own financial resilience. So in this episode, we're going to go through those two. And then in the third part, we're just going to reflect a bit more about what does this mean? How is it that you're making decisions differently once you're in a position where you feel like your fixed expenses are to an affordable point and you have a healthy emergency fund. So the first part is all about the meaning behind your emergency fund. So this is all about understanding exactly what role cash plays in our personal finances. So that's the first question that I would put out there. Exactly what does it mean to have cash sitting in our accounts? Now I'll read out a quote here that says, "The best financial plans ensure that clients have sufficient liquidity for expenditure requirements and for unexpected emergencies." Now, this sentence came straight from a practice paper from the exams I was sitting earlier this year to get the qualifications to start being qualified as a financial planner. And that was the correct answer to a very simple question, which was, what makes a good financial plan? And effectively, what it's trying to do is emphasize the importance of liquidity. And what liquidity means is simply having enough cash available and have that be easily available too. And that's effectively the purpose of what an emergency fund does. And I always say that building an emergency fund, whilst if you're someone who's starting off, perhaps your first immediate goal is to get rid of any debt that you have. That, of course, is like a big priority. The purpose of the emergency fund is so that you can keep going with that goal of getting rid of your debt, knowing that you're not wiping yourself out as well in the process if something were to happen. So the purpose of an emergency fund is to allow us to effectively tackle our goals. And it very well might be that the first one is to tackle debt. And the reason I mention this first is why it is the intuitive question that someone might say, if I have an emergency to deal with, which is to tackle my debt, and that's why I'm paying attention to my personal finances, it's still important to have a little bit of a cushion. So the first thing about your emergency fund is actually deciding what the size of it should be. And so yes, perhaps if what you're trying to do is go after debt, get rid of it very quickly, it might make sense to keep a much smaller emergency fund. But in general, an emergency fund is relative to your personal finances, irrespective of who you are. So I like to think about it in terms of ratios. So the size of an emergency fund is, for someone who has a regular paycheck, it's often just 3 to 6 months of your expenses. And how much should your expenses be? That is kind of sometimes difficult to calculate off the bat. But if you think of yourself of wanting to have a very balanced budget, a balanced budget doesn't take up more than 50% of monthly payslip on expenses. So that means, conversely, that you will be able to just say, well, 50% of my salary multiplied by however many months I want my emergency fund size to be. 3 to 6 months is kind of a good amount. Why? Because the assumption there is that that's how long it will take you to replace your current income stream if it's no longer there. And that's why, for example, if you are someone who's in a more riskier endeavor, if you're a business owner, intuitively you will feel like you'll need to have a much more sizable amount of cash available so that you can keep yourself in business if something were to happen that was beyond your control. And it might be tempting to just say, okay, so I'm going to start preparing a budget, and then from that budget I'm going to start saving my emergency fund and then move on to other goals. I wouldn't worry so much about the way that your budget looks like. If you're able to just focus on getting to that emergency fund without any other distractions, you will intuitively know how is it that you can cut back if you need to, or where you can get more income and that sort of thing. Of course, all in a balanced and halal way, you'll be able to get to the point where you have your emergency fund and then think about a balanced budget. Why? Is because the way I think about the emergency fund and the budget working together, they support one another, because the point of budgeting is that you're able to confidently plan in general terms. For example, at any given point, you feel like over the next 18 months, this is how much I'm saving for things that don't happen every month, such as holidays or that type of purchase. The way that you want to plan for those, even if they might be 6, 12 months, 18 months ahead, you want to plan those by having a part of your budget dedicated to those sorts of future goals. And that's part of very short-term budgeting. I would see budgeting as something that you have that has a horizon of up to 2 years. Like, this is my current budget for the next 6 months, and after 6 months I'm going to revise it, etc. And we can go into that detail a lot more, but here what our focus is, the role of the emergency fund. What this allows you to do is to keep moving forward with your plans and not have them be interrupted if an emergency were to happen, because you can deal with that with the cash that you have available in your emergency fund, and over time build that back up and know that you will always have this cushion. So this logic is so important to grasp when you're starting out budgeting, is because that's also the sort of thing that's going to keep you invested for the long term. Because if an emergency were to happen and you know you've got this money invested, the reason you want to do that is to keep your money invested long term. You don't want to have to take it out. So the purpose of the emergency fund is to allow your investments to also not be disrupted in the event of an emergency. So all of this has to do with increasing the flexibility that you give yourself in your life. And I have to say that so far I've mentioned to planning your short-term goals and supporting your long-term investing goals. Yes, those are two ways that your emergency fund supports you, but the one that really convinced me, and oftentimes people say that, you know, in your 20s you should focus more on increasing your income and that you have different goals for different phases of your life. The reason why an emergency fund is a great place to start, especially at the beginning of your career, is because you are able to then make career decisions that are so important in your 20s and 30s from a position of strength. You will never have to feel like, oh, I have to stay in this job because I need this paycheck, or I can't convince myself to invest this much money in a course or that sort of thing because what happens if I need it? You're able to just make decisions in line with the goals that you're trying to achieve, and you're able to give yourself the room to make those decisions without allowing the conversation to not just be finished by the affordability question. You're able to actually make and reflect on the plans that best serve you in the future, inshallah. And that was kind of it, really, because that can ultimately, there is no cap in the kind of benefit that you get from being able to make smart decisions from a position of strength. Yeah, and to just iterate that one more time, the way that your emergency fund works is that it will allow you to make better life decisions because you want to take that question off the table, and this will help you massively further along in your career too, because you've managed early on to try to get yourself out of the cycle of having to rely on the next paycheck to keep your life running. And, you know, the reason I say this very last bit about how it could help you at any point in your career is because an emergency fund, immediately it sounds like, okay, but what if someone had quite a lot of liquidity in any given month, maybe they'll be able to just take care of stuff as they come up? Well, you might not call it your emergency fund in that case, but you certainly would have something called a margin. And the idea of having a margin of safety is like a very fundamental concept in investing, and people talk about that because it allows you to kind of stay in the game for as long as possible and to weather any kind of risky events as a result, because any given you're more comfortable with a wider range of outcomes. So yes, in the end, having a margin of safety is quite the opposite of being conservative. You're not playing small at all, because the idea of having a margin of safety is about trying to raise your financial baseline, so your starting point, from zero, because you know that you'll create this buffer, and this way you're increasing your odds of success when things get risky, because you're able to withstand a wider range of outcomes. And that's what kind of brings me to the end of the point about financial resilience by way of an emergency fund. The second point is about having financial resilience through giving yourself room to breathe within your budget. And that kind starts by simply asking yourself the question of how much does it actually take to keep the lights on in your life? And I mean you yourself as an individual and the people that you are responsible for, so your immediate nucleus. What does it take to keep the lights on there? And the thinking there is quite simple. It's simply about trying to keep the recurring expenses as low as possible. And when I say this, I really don't mean that it follows that you should live a very small life. Everybody has essential expenses that are commodities, like your utilities, your groceries to a certain extent. You know that you will need this for very baseline sustenance, and that has a price, and having an awareness of that cost allows you to know what your starting point is. And so I'm referring to, I mentioned groceries, I mentioned utilities, that also includes essential travel, housing. And these four kind of get split, I would say, in eight different points. So you have your housing, you've then got your council tax as well, you've got your travel, so the way that you travel to and from work or wherever else is essential. You have your electricity and your gas bill, you've got your water bill too, and then you've got things like your mobile phone and your broadband, and lastly, the eighth is groceries. Now, having an awareness of the cost of all these eight line items is kind of the extent of the granularity to which I budget. I try to keep as few line items as possible so that I know that I'm focusing on the things that will make a difference. So very often I just have a catch-all amount, and I've spoken about how I have two current accounts, one of which is a Monzo account where I pay myself. It used to be roughly 15% of my paycheck to go towards just the general spending that I would do, just swiping my card on the weekends, that kind of stuff. And I'm not going into detail there and say, this is how much I'm doing for the gym, this is how much I'm doing for, you know, maybe if you have a Spotify subscription and that kind of stuff. I think about that as general spending. Whether or not I want to have that subscription and how I want to pay for it is another question. And I try, where possible, to limit the amount of monthly subscriptions I keep. You kind of want to raise the threshold with which you're able to cover things just upfront and in full. And in general, I try to work towards having a high tolerance to what I consider something that I'm willing to pay for every single month. You sometimes get these subscriptions that are like £2 a month, and I'm like, I'd much rather just pay the £24 and not have to think about this and see it come up on my Monzo every single month. That's kind of draining for my mental capacity. So instead, in terms of knowing the really specific line items to which to focus on, I don't try to go beyond those eight in terms of things that I have to keep like a hawk eye on. And of course, there are different families are structured differently, and perhaps we're not all responsible for each of those light items. But having a sense of what housing costs in general in your area, I feel like it's good, because it adds like hard evidence for you to then make other decisions. Because oftentimes, if you know where you start and you kind of know what you're working with, when it comes to making negotiations, when it comes to kind of knowing whether something is a good deal for you or not, or it will work out for you, you're able to make that decision on like based on hard evidence. And it's so much easier to have those kinds of conversations and make those sorts of plans when you kind of know what's what. And the reason I say this is also because my next point about related to building your financial resilience, the way that we do that is by making sure that those eight things that I talked about, we're comfortable negotiating the price of those down. And with this respect, I mean, it's unfortunate, but it's true that oftentimes utility companies and high street banks make it difficult for people to switch. And recently there have been laws that have come in to encourage insurance companies to not make loyalty an actual negative for people. And the fact that this whole thing is a real problem, the fact that the default option is actually not the best option, means that getting ourselves okay with the idea of having to negotiate and getting started with that as early as possible so that it gets easier over time is the message here. I think about it as like going to the dentist or getting the ends snipped off your hair. Once you start doing it regularly, you see that they have to cut a lot less hair every 6 months, and similarly, your dentist is going to make your life a lot less painful when you go to visit, if you've been flossing, for instance. And so when I talk about negotiating bills, which ones are the low-hanging fruits? The easiest one is always the mobile phone, because it's easy to check the prices. I look at Money Saving Expert, quite literally. I have it up on my screen when I call my mobile phone provider, so that then I know the best deal. And oftentimes you never even have to switch, they will match the best deal for you. After that is your energy bills. For a long time in the UK, the variable rate, so just the overall price of electricity, the standard rate, was the quote-unquote cheapest. Now we know that energy prices will rise, and likely in July and then again in October. And that wasn't the trend for the past 12 months or so. Since the Ukraine war 2 years ago, we know the prices rose. And then since then, they've kind of step by step been coming down. And so the reason I say this is because if there is like a fixed term contract that you can find for the next 12 months, it's likely that the price will be lower than the price that you'll pay if you're still on the variable rate all the way through to October. So like I'm actually, it's on my to-do list to have a look at what is the best deal for gas and electricity. In the next couple of weeks, I'll have to look at that. And I don't suspect that that's going to be a tough conversation. I know that I'm going to be simply switching just to the best available one. And when you switch, you get the benefit of being the first-time customer and that kind of stuff. Yeah, I know for sure that I'm not going to be staying with my current provider. Whereas for mobile phone, I've never actually had to switch. I've always just been able to get the prevailing deal and just said, this is what these people are saying they're going to give me, can you match it? It sounds like, oh, is it really that easy? I have to say, the last time I negotiated one of these utility bills was in January for our broadband, and I thought that conversation was going to be a lot harder than it was, because I had just gotten off like what was at the time a really good introductory offer. And the next deal that I got was actually not too bad. And it's, you know, these things are difficult because you might have like certain providers in your area, so your hands are kind of tied to a certain extent, but there is leeway. And I thought that it was going to take me like 45 minutes to be on the phone, but it honestly wasn't more than 15. So when you think about your mobile phone, that's the one you start with. If you've never negotiated a bill before, I would start with that one. And then energy, and think about making sure that you've got a smart meter too, and then with that also your broadband. Those three are really crucial, and then any insurance that you have or pay for. It's important to make sure you just use the price comparison sites and switch to the cheapest one every, just put it on autopilot, because it can easily double, triple over the space of 3 or 4 or 5 years. And so if we think about, are we kind of nickel and diming here? Like, what's the point of focusing on £5 there, £10 there, £15 there? I mean, you know, that's already £30 a month. And those things, they do add up over time. And especially since we're talking about things increasing every time, it will just keep growing at a rate that if we look back, the numbers start to look a bit bigger. The point here is simply to be aware of what is it that's happening. And so this next point about financial resilience, it's simply about keeping a watchful eye on your fixed expenses. I liken this to what happened during the financial crisis. So we're now over 15 years removed from the great financial crisis of 2008 and 2009. The aftermath from it and the recovery from it, all of that focused on increasing the financial resilience of the global economy. What happened there was that it wasn't an individual loan that wasn't paid or a particular transaction. It was because of how convoluted and complicated these financial instruments were, how widespread the problem was before anybody realized what was going on, and then how difficult it was to get a handle on it once things started to go haywire. And I'm sure you can think of other analogies that are out there too. The idea is simply to think about things that could get out of control really quickly if we don't keep an eye on them, and building these routines that, especially with the fixed expenses, don't need to bother you more than once every 12 months or once every 18 months. And so to conclude, when we think about the initial question, which was about allowing ways of spending and saving and more on financial literacy in general, I find that having one goal and knowing that you're working towards that goal, so you're not just simply putting a certain money to the side every month. What you're doing is that relative to your income and relative to your expenses, you're increasing your financial resilience. And that is a situation that you want to be in irrespective of
how much wealth you have. I mean, comparisons are to be avoided at all costs. You're just comparing these metrics to other elements of your finances and what it is that you need. So how nimble you are, it will be entirely dependent on how much of your income is taken up by your fixed expenses. Similarly, your emergency fund will be relative to what it is that you need in those circumstances. It's all about the purpose of what it is that you're trying to achieve, which is to make sure that you have a solid foundation when it comes to your personal finances. And that's kind of where I will end this episode, because in many ways, what we are trying to achieve by building our financial resilience is ensuring that, inshallah, we're able to always keep moving forwards. You kind of want to get to the point where, yes, I have an emergency fund that I'm able to maintain relative to my income, and I've done what I can to make sure that my expenses are balanced relative to my budget. I've had a look at that and I'm aware of what my essential expenses are. All of this is so that we can then move on to other goals. And it's very difficult to feel like you're back to square one in terms of financial literacy, because the purpose of what we're trying to do has more to do with supporting our plans and our goals rather than us, you know, making sure we've read that chapter and making sure we understand this terminology. I always look at personal finance as a tool for us to live the life that is aligned to our goals, inshallah. So thanks so much for joining me for this episode of the Nisa Invest Tea Talk podcast. I will see you next week. Bye for now. Woo! Woo!